Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Our Capitol Report correspondents sum up an extremely active and occasionally contentious week in Tallahassee.
So I've been trying to get some answers from the Agency for Healthcare Administration, but they've been kind of tight-lipped about exactly what their plans are and what they're intending to do.
Also tonight, we'll recall the last time the Florida legislature voted on the Equal Rights Amendment some 35 years ago.
16 yeas, 22 nays, Mr. President.
Failed to the
And consider whether another state's ERA yes vote this week might give the amendment another shot in the Sunshine State. We'll also continue our discussion of opioid abuse and its fatal impact. I'm Tom Flanagan. We'll wrap up this third week of the 2017 Florida lawmaking session right here on Capitol Report. Wrapping up this third week of the Florida legislative session with our Capitol Report Correspondents Roundtable, we will kick it off with Lynn Hatter. What you've been following this week, Lynn, and what do you think is kind of the highlight of the week as far as what you've been looking at?
Hey, Tom. So one of the big stories that's been moving here in Florida is the story of a Central Florida prosecutor named Aramis Ayala. She has said that she will no longer seek the death penalty in capital cases, and she's got some big ones before her, most notably the case of Keith Lloyd, who's accused of killing his pregnant girlfriend and a police officer. That decision has really landed her in the crosshairs of Florida's Republican leaders. Richard Corcoran said that he'd like to see her be suspended from office for that position. Another thing that came up that I've been following and I thought was really interesting was the conversation this week at the State Board of Education. Education Commissioner Pam Stewart basically came out and said that some Florida school districts may be fudging their graduation rates, and we actually kind of have a bite of what she said.
The reason this is potentially concerning is that if it is done inappropriately or without good reason, the school, district, and state graduation rates may not be a complete picture of our students' performance.
Now, there are about a handful of counties that are using these online private schools to steer kids who otherwise wouldn't get a diploma into them in their senior year. The question is that helping out the kid who couldn't pass Florida's graduation test, or is it helping out the district? There's going to be a statewide investigation to dig down a little bit more into that, and that's going to be really interesting going forward.
What have you been following, Kate Payne?
How to dole out the settlement fund from the BP oil spill. The House actually just yesterday finalized their plan. The full House voted on this plan of how to get that money to the most affected counties in the panhandle. Each of the counties will get 6% of those funds, and they wanted to do that to ensure that even the least populated counties will be able to get some of that money and won't be penalized for not having a larger population. The House and Senate bills are still a bit far away. They've got some differences that they need to reconcile, but Panama City Republican Representative Jay Trumbull does believe that they can get there.
There's obviously some significant differences. The Senate version does have economic incentives in the bill, but we've done a lot of things that mirror the Senate's version.
And so that money will ultimately go to education and infrastructure, as well as job development and some amount of tourism promotion.
We've also been following a lot on the healthcare front with all of the things that are going on in Washington and right here in Florida. Sarah Mueller, that's been your bailiwick pretty much this week.
Yes, Tom, it has been a busy week. Last week, Governor Rick Scott said that he wanted to block grant Medicaid funding from the federal government. And that's worrying a lot of hospitals and healthcare advocates. Many people think that there's going to be a lot more uncompensated care and emergency room visits because of that. Former House Minority Leader Mark Pafford thinks that hospitals and doctors are going to be at the losing end of this.
You're going to see people who leave the business, if you will, because that's what medical care is right now. It's a business. you're going to see people walk away. And I think it's going to double down on more people without an ability to go to a doctor.
So I've been trying to get some answers from the Agency for Healthcare Administration, but they've been kind of tight-lipped about exactly what their plans are and what they're intending to do. And at the federal level, there's a lot of uncertainty because Republicans are having trouble passing a repeal and replace legislation. So we're just going to have to wait and see how this all shakes out.
So this is anybody's guess, and people are placing their bets, which brings us to, of course, Regan McCarthy, who's been following a lot of gambling issues this week.
We haven't talked about gambling in a little while, but we saw it moving forward again this week. The House advanced its bill through its next committee, and it still remains quite divergent from the Senate plan. One area where they really differ is that the House plan would sort of freeze all of the gambling abilities, especially the abilities that paramutuals have to stay sort of right where they are right now. The Senate plan includes a plan that would let several counties that have passed referendums to allow their paramutuals and their communities to offer slot machines to do that. And that's one area where there really seems to be a sticking point. Despite that, Senate President Joe Negron told reporters in a press conference this week he's feeling optimistic that that's something that could be worked out.
I am very optimistic that we're going to be able to have a final Seminole Compact and also a gaming bill that respects the eight counties that voted for additional gaming opportunities.
And President Negron says that he does think that coming up with a plan, getting something passed, figuring out where the state stands as far as the Seminole Indian Tribe and our gambling agreement with the tribe goes, he thinks that's an important part of figuring out the budgeting process. So I think that's something we're going to be seeing moving forward here more, and we'll get a chance to talk about some more coming down the road here.
Which will be probably at the end of week four, which is coming up, and we'll be talking with you guys then. Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, Kate Payne, and Lynn Hatter, our Capitol Report correspondents. Thanks, guys. Still to come on Capitol Report, as the national scourge of opioid addiction tightens its grip in Florida, we'll get an up-close look at who it actually affects.
Only time I seen it was in the 70s, but it wasn't killing nobody. It's just sad, man.
And the Nevada legislature has ratified the Equal Rights Amendment. We'll speak with a reporter who was on the scene.
I think it's interesting your question about will people be surprised that this happened in Nevada? I don't think Nevadans are surprised.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
The rate of overdose deaths from opioids went up 75% between 2014 and 2015, and that number continues to climb. Florida isn't alone. Opioid addiction is ravaging parts of the U.S. The situation is critical in South Florida, where WLRN's Peter Hayden brings us this report. And a note to our listeners, some parts of the story may be disturbing.
Hello.
Hi.
Did you call?
Yeah, we did.
I'm riding on patrol with Sergeant Ed McCabe from the Delray Beach Police Department.
What's going on, man? Not too much.
And this man just rose from the dead.
What happened?
I guess I overdosed.
The man's roommates found him unconscious and turning blue, not breathing. He was overdosing on heroin. They pulled out two auto-injectors of an overdose reversal drug, naloxone, and jabbed him into his thigh. He came to.
I'm just glad these guys were here to help.
Hi, paramedics are on their way. How are you feeling?
The people who live here are prepared for episodes like this. It's a sober living facility. The man is a recovering heroin user from Ohio, and like thousands of others, he came to South Florida to get well.
How far is this from the first overdose that we saw this evening?
A block and a half.
How long have we been riding around together?
5 minutes.
It's 6:45 on a Friday evening, and this is the second heroin overdose call tonight. Delray Beach is at the epicenter of a South Florida overdose epidemic. It's estimated to have claimed more than 1,000 lives last year. Medical examiners are still counting.
29, clear 2.
Sergeant McCabe's a cop's cop, 36, about 6 feet tall, athletic, grew up in New Jersey in a family of cops. He's been working these same neighborhoods in Delray since he joined the force 15 years ago. Sergeant McCabe says about 5 years back, Delray started to change.
Yeah, the overdoses, they're like a dime a dozen, so I think it's just, you hate to say it, but it's more routine nowadays than anything else.
Three things came together to create this South Florida overdose crisis. About 10 years ago, South Florida developed the dubious distinction of being the pill mill capital of the U.S.
It was like a revolving door. You're watching zombies coming in and out of the city from all over. Guys coming down from Kentucky with fake prescriptions and fake x-rays, showing a doctor, getting prescribed like 300 pills within an hour or so. They'd run out of them. It was that crazy.
In 2011, state and federal agencies cracked down on the South Florida pill mills.
Shady doctors.
But by then, lots of locals were hooked on the drugs. So they turned to something cheaper, easier to find, and totally unpredictable. Street heroin.
62 years I've been living here, but I ain't never seen heroin this bad, man.
Rudolph Wims has also seen the change. He's standing outside a dimly lit corner store in central Delray Beach.
Only time I seen it was in the 70s, but it wasn't killing nobody. It's just sad, man.
Back on patrol, McCabe slows down as we pass a brick duplex.
Overdose there last week. The guy was there, just moved in. He was there for about 4 hours.
This brings us to the second factor. That guy just arrived in Delray from out of state.
For decades, South Florida has been this absolute mecca for people in recovery. People would come from all over the world to receive treatment services here.
Andrew Berkey runs Life of Recovery, a treatment center on the Florida Atlantic University campus in Boca Raton. Starting in the 1970s, treatment centers in Palm Beach County began offering a sun-soaked solution to kick addiction. People came, got clean, and stayed.
One, it's a very, very geographically nice location, the same reason people retire down here. I mean, it's, hashtag subtropical paradise. But then, I mean, there's also just a lot of talented clinicians and a huge community that built up down here.
In Palm Beach County, addiction recovery is a $1 billion a year industry, according to an analysis by the Palm Beach Post.
And so you have this large, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that are in recovery that are supportive of new people coming in recovery, which is what made South Florida vulnerable to be preyed upon.
Patients and insurance companies. Corrupt operators figured out they could make millions by billing for expensive, unnecessary tests. And when a patient's insurance benefits are tapped out, a relapse will start those benefits all over again, which means there's more money to be made when patients fall off the wagon than when they stay sober. Besides that, drug dealers have also figured out how to benefit. Sergeant McCabe.
You have what are so-called sober homes next to houses that sell drugs. Back in the day, you never really had that.
The sheer number of opioid overdoses in South Florida is overwhelming police, firefighters, hospitals, and morgues. Officials estimate first responders in Palm Beach County answered 5,000 overdose calls last year, more than twice as many as the year before. And then there's the psychological toll.
I'm in my 32nd year. Our personnel at a very young age, young in tenure, are seeing more deaths than I've seen in my career.
Delray Beach Fire Rescue Chief Neil DeJesus brought on a stress management counselor to help his firefighters cope.
It's unlike anything we've seen. It's just not normal.
What's causing all those deaths, by and large, is the third factor. Street heroin is now cut with super potent synthetic opioids, like fentanyl and carfentanil, thousands of times stronger than morphine. And the overdose reversal drug, naloxone, often referred to by the brand name Narcan, isn't working like it used to. McCabe says now the Delray Beach police usually have to wait for the fire department.
They could do it through the vein. They could do it through the bone marrow.
Bone marrow?
Yeah. They get out a little drill. Looks like a Black & Decker drill. They drill it into either your shin bone or your shoulder. And they basically little thing sticks out of it when they're done. And they just plug the Narcan through there and it goes right through it.
Through the bone marrow and straight into the bloodstream. Even that is no guarantee for revival.
2954.
I have two overdoses in progress. One is seizing. They are both breathing with gurgling respiration.
10-4-51 code.
We arrive at the house and McCabe parks in the yard.
Do you mind if we come in?
Yeah, please.
Upstairs?
Yeah. There's a needle on the floor.
In a room upstairs, two young women are overdosing on heroin. Both are unconscious, one's not breathing. She's turning blue. After about 10 minutes, the first victim comes walking out with firefighters. They strap her into a stretcher waiting outside the door. Then the other woman is carried out on a stretcher. She wasn't breathing, so firefighters got out the drill.
If you look at the girl's shoulder, remember the thing I was telling you about where they go through the bone marrow?
Yeah.
They did it to her.
You can see it, a clear plastic tube sticking out of her shoulder.
All right, so the one girl took 7, the other one took 10 doses.
Doses of the overdose reversal drug.
It seems like there are more and more doses every time.
None of the 4 overdose calls Sergeant McCabe responded to this night in Delray Beach were fatal. Not so for the 10 fatal ODs in Palm Beach County last Friday alone, or the estimated 4,000 people who died from opioid overdoses in Florida last year. Governors of 5 states have declared the opioid crisis a public health emergency. Florida lawmakers have called on Governor Rick Scott to do the same. I'm Peter Hayden.
An unfortunate circumstance regarding one member of the Florida legislature with a blood alcohol level nearly double the legal limit. State Representative Kerry Pigman was charged with drunken driving after a traffic stop on Florida's Turnpike several hours after a House session yesterday. That according to a police report. Pigman, who's aged 58, is an Avon Park Republican. He was charged with driving under the influence by the Florida Highway Patrol after being pulled over about 10:45 last night near the Fort Pierce Service Plaza in St. Lucie County. Elected without opposition to a 3rd term last year, Pigman is an emergency medicine physician. He chairs the House Health Quality Subcommittee and is a member of the U.S. Army Reserve, who's been deployed 3 times since 2011. His largely rural district includes Highlands, Glades, and Okeechobee counties and part of western St. Lucie County. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, this week, Nevada's legislature ratified the Equal Rights Amendment. It's been 40 years since the last state approved the provision, and the move raises questions about Congress's 1982 deadline. Today, we'll hear from a reporter on the ground in Nevada and the Florida lawmaker sponsoring a ratification measure here. But first, we're going to look back to a 2015 story from Nick Evans about passing an amendment that's just a little bit older.
This is Tallahassee, June 21st, 1982. Governor Bob Graham has just convened a special session to consider ratification for the Equal Rights Amendment, or ERA.
Section 2, the legislature of the state of Florida is convened for the sole and exclusive purpose of considering the following matters. 1, ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment.
It's an idea that's been around since the 20s, and in 1972, Congress sent the amendment to the states for ratification. The Florida House has approved the resolution already, voting it through in 72, 75, and 79. And it's going to do so again today. But it's a different story in the Senate.
16 yeas, 22 nays, Mr. President.
Fails for the ballot.
So actually, the wording of the amendment, just for your edification, is equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That is the entire wording of the amendment.
For the past 5 years, Lantana Democrat Lori Berman has filed legislation in the Florida House to ratify the ERA. And in those 5 years, her bill is yet to get a vote. Part of the reason why the ERA doesn't get much of a hearing is that it pits social conservatives against social liberals. Early on, many Republicans supported the ERA, but in the mid-70s, the party began to shift, and its members began embracing a more socially conservative outlook. But the other reason is many believe the ERA is already dead.
You know, when an amendment is proposed, there is usually a time where it has to be ratified. There is one exception of an amendment that was passed something like 200 years afterwards. So I think that even though we have a time limit, there could be some legislative action that could extend the time period and we could go beyond that.
Could I have you tell me which amendment that
is? I got to look about that.
Then, a few minutes later.
I want to, don't put in that quote about the 200 years, because I'm not finding the what it was. So.
Well, it turns out she was right. It's the 27th Amendment, and it was passed by this guy.
Yes, my name is Gregory Watson, and I live here in Austin, Texas.
Back in 1982, Watson was an undergraduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. His professor asked the class to write a paper on a governmental process. And Watson was actually planning to write about the ERA's attempted ratification, until he came across a book that discussed earlier failed amendments.
This one particular amendment from the year 1789 immediately stood out to me. And it said that when members of Congress want to give themselves a pay raise, they must stand for re-election first before they receive the pay raise.
Watson changed course. Unlike the ERA, this amendment had no date attached. That's because Congress didn't start attaching deadlines until 1917. So Watson wrote up his paper, arguing the nearly two-century-old amendment was still ripe for passage. You gotta see.
So that was when I decided I was going to get the amendment ratified.
He started writing letters, and the very next year, the amendment came up in the Maine legislature. Watson was off and running.
Colorado approved 1985. Another five states approved it. South Dakota, New Hampshire, next year 1986. I got three more, which were New Mexico. The year after that, 1987. Arkansas, Montana, Connecticut, and Wisconsin. 1988, I got Georgia. I got Louisiana. 1989 was the busiest year.
In May of 1992, the National Archivist added Watson's amendment to the Constitution. There hasn't been another one since. So what does Watson think of the ERA's deadline?
If you look at the actual text of Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, nowhere do you find in Article 5 any mention of a deadline.
That pretty much brings us up to present day. At an event earlier this month, the University of Texas officially changed Watson's grade on that paper. He got an A+. But more importantly, the Nevada State Legislature has voted to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. And to talk about that, we're joined by Carrie Kaufman of member station KNPR in Las Vegas. So Carrie, tell me what happened this week.
Well, this week, Nevada became the 36th state to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. It came out of assembly and then was concurred in the Senate. And now there are only two states left.
It's pretty amazing, right? I believe the last state to ratify was in the late 70s, based on your reporting. And so how did the ball get rolling again in Nevada?
The ball got rolling because of one person, Senator Pat Spearman, who was elected in 2013, was her first term. And she has been pushing. She's been working for the ERA most of her life. And once she got into the Senate, she's been pushing this, putting it out on the floor, And then this year, Nevada turned blue. We have a Democratic Assembly and a Democratic Senate. And the leader, the Senate Majority Leader, actually testified in committee for this bill as himself. So you knew at that point that this bill was going through and it was going to pass. It passed largely along party lines. There was one Republican in the Assembly who voted for it.
Am I right in assuming that perhaps the average person would be surprised to think this might have happened in Nevada? Is it really that the election in 2016 is the thing that made this happen?
It was brought up in the last two sessions. It did not pass. The last session in 2015 was Republican-led, and it didn't even get out of committee. So, yes, the election, the fact that there are Democrats there made a huge difference. But I think it's interesting your question about will people be surprised that this happened in Nevada? I don't think Nevadans are surprised. I think that the rest of the country has kind of looked at Nevada a little differently than we see ourselves.
Okay, great. I assume that there have been not just local folks interested in moving this forward, but you're probably having people parachuting in from all over the country to get involved with pushing this through. So
honestly, I don't think they are. I think that that people on a national level were really kind of surprised by this. This is something that Pat Spearman really did just kind of push through. And now that it's being done, now people on a national level are saying, oh, well, there's only two more states left. Who could possibly now ratify the ERA and how can we get this through? But it was dormant until Pat Spearman came up with this.
Are you hearing anything from folks out there about, you know, potential next steps for this?
Well, of the states that have not passed the ERA yet, the only blue state is Illinois. The only one that is likely that has a Democratic legislature is Illinois. Virginia has not passed it, as you have said. Florida has not passed it. All the rest of the states are deeply red southern and midwestern states. So there are, I've heard some talk about targeting Illinois and targeting Virginia. I don't know about the rest.
I guess if there are any final things you'd like to add about just sort of getting to witness history.
Yeah, it was really cool. Jill Tolles, actually a Republican who voted for the amendment in the assembly, got up and talked about being the daughter of a single mother. A lot of people actually got up and talked about being raised by single parents, which I think has an effect on this. People gave very moving speeches. And Jill specifically talked about, yeah, this may be symbolism, but her wedding ring is symbolic. We stand under Nevada's seal every time we go into legislative session. The U.S. flag also flies. And all of these are symbols that have an impact on people. And the argument for voting for this is that these symbols will make women feel like they are equal, even if it's not passed.
Okay, that's great. Well, I think that's the extent of everything. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes to talk with you.
No problem. Thank you.
Meanwhile, in Florida, Lori Berman is no longer carrying the ratification measure. She's passed the torch to Coral Gables Representative Daisy Baez.
Well, first of all, I am very grateful to Representative Berman for entrusting me with this responsibility because I do see it as a big, humongous responsibility to keep the flame of the Equal Rights Amendment alive and well.
Baez is happy to see another state ratifying the amendment, but she has no illusions about the road ahead.
Well, I think with every state that passes this, we inch closer to where we need to be. I don't anticipate that we are going to have three states pass it this year, therefore making it into the Constitution, but if we have to just fight for two more states next year, then that's a victory, in my opinion.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.